This is Suno India Production. You can now listen to all our episodes on our Android and iPhone app. Download it now.
Air conditioning systems, be it refrigeration of products or for cooling the rooms, these are indispensable for maintaining comfortable indoor environments in offices, shops, and homes. The cooling industry is vital but poses significant environmental challenges. It contributes a substantial 10% to global CO2 emissions, surpassing even aviation and shipping combined. With temperature on the rise due to climate change, the demand for cooling solutions is expected to surge further. Now, as the world feels the heat to reduce their impact on climate change, the cooling industry is in for a major transformation in how it manufactures and disposes of refrigerants. A refrigerant is a working fluid used in the refrigeration cycles of air conditioning systems and heat pumps, where in most cases they undergo a repeated phase transition from a liquid to a gas and back again. Now, over the last 30 years, the governments globally have committed to tightening regulations on the powerful climate warming chemicals used in cooling systems. Meanwhile, companies are actively exploring natural and less harmful alternatives. Environmental activists argue that the pace of change needs to accelerate significantly to meet international climate targets. Hi, I'm Sneha Richaria and this is Climate Emergency. How are your cooling appliances making the climate worse? What exactly is energy efficiency and what makes an appliance energy efficient? What role can the consumers play? What do they do with their refrigerant-filled equipment once they are done using them? Besides, what is it about refrigerants that make them so bad for the climate? I spoke to Vishal Thapa, Senior Director at CLASP, an international non-profit organization which provides technical and policy support to governments worldwide and works to implement energy efficiency standards and labels for appliances.
Vishal, welcome to the podcast. I want you to first help us imagine the scale of the problem. By that, I mean that we use a lot of different types of appliances. I'm referring to cooling devices more often. So how are they firstly making things worse? And then I also want you to talk about this local Indian context and share your experience of working with the problem for so many years.
Yeah, summer is approaching, you said. You know, we're already feeling it. If you flip through a newspaper, you'll see that, like, literally the first few pages is covered with full-page ads of ACs. Over the last few years, between 19 and 21, for example, that increased 21%. And today, just the energy use from cooling accounts for 10% of the total energy use. So it's a very significant and sizable number. And so that is at the crux of the matter, is as we respond to climate, as we respond to the need to reduce emissions, we're figuring out, how do we balance this? How can we remain comfortable? So we need cooling, but at the same time, be conscious of the fact that we need to reduce emissions very, very fast in order to get to our goal. And this is where energy efficiency would play a critical role in that. And what I mean by energy efficiency is that we can still have cooling. We can still have some of the comforts of our appliances and equipment that we use, but we just use a lot less energy to do it.
I want you to break this down for us. What are the factors that contribute to, let's say, an appliance being energy efficient? So what makes an appliance energy efficient?
Energy efficiency, in a nutshell, is just about how do we produce the same or more output with the same amount of energy input or slightly lower. So if you think about the input-output ratio, we're basically trying to shrink that as much as possible. It's basically the concept of do more with less, right? Well, it's the same concept that's put into appliances. I think it's also important for your listeners here to make a distinction between efficiency and conservation. We sometimes mix the two things together, but it's not exactly the same. Efficiency is about production with a lesser amount of energy input. Conservation is where you are learning to switch things off, right? Because you might not need it, or you're just conscious of it. So, for example, you know, people say, "Well, if we just switch off all our lights, that's efficient." No, it's not efficient. That's more about conservation. You're just learning to switch it off. So, if I say on hot days, you know, let's just switch off our ACs and let's just adjust to fans for a greater portion of the day, that's conservation. But if I'm using the same cooling from AC, but I'm using a more efficient AC, that's efficiency. In some sense, both of these things must come together. We must use more energy efficient appliances, but at the same time, we must learn, you know, to conserve, to use less. And that's equally a part. If you look at India's overall strategy, you'll see now it creates both of these as, you know, as it's promoting both of these. It's saying you have to have smarter efficiency. You have to have more energy efficiency in products and appliances we use. But at the same time, we also have to be conscious of what we're using and how we're using. So just to give you an example, right, the Bureau of Energy Efficiency, which handles, which is the institutional agency responsible for the implementation of energy efficiency in India, and this rule out that the default temperature on AC is set to 24. By making a nudge 1 or 2 degrees above in the AC setting, you save a lot of energy. And we're just, you know, slowly getting ourselves to, in essence, adapt to just slightly higher temperature level within a comfort zone. That's an element of conservation, but it's beginning to blend into this notion of efficiency. So while the two elements are not necessarily distinct, it's important to recognize that they're both very important. Within India, almost all households now in India, and I mean almost all, like well over 90%, want at least a fan for cooling. So it's predominant. And these fans account for close to 40% of most household bills. Like the energy cost of running these fans account for close to 40% of most household bills. So it's a pretty big share of the overall cooling. ACs, on the other hand, are, you know, provide far more in terms of the space cooling, in terms of comfort, etc. But they're also more expensive, and they're not accessible to all households. And so in India currently, about 10%, just over 10% of households have access to air conditioners, right? Use air conditioners. So I'll just come to fans first because it's more immediate in terms of the scale of ownership. The fans, as technological change, has enabled a new type of system called the brushless DC technology, which essentially reduces the need for energy for the same amount of, you know, wind that it provides from the fan. So on average, the saving goes from about 70 plus watts, which is currently, is the amount of energy used in the current fan is around 70 watts. The new fans are under around 30 watts. So it's a fairly large saving that is there. Worldwide, the level of technology that is available in terms of energy efficiency is much higher than what is currently available in India. And I think there's an opportunity to try to access what's available globally in India. The challenge for all of us with this technology availability in India is basically twofold. One is, how do we ensure that consumers still can get access to these products for the ones that are more efficient, because they tend to be slightly more expensive when they are first introduced. And the second is, how do we also enable its production of these more higher efficient products in India so that we're able to manufacture these domestically as well? So these are the kinds of challenges that I think policymakers and other stakeholders in India are trying to address in terms of enhancing the efficiency of these appliances.
I was also curious about how does the refrigerants work exactly. So I know that they are cooling agents and that they work by, absorbing heat and it leaves out cool air, right? So, but technically, how in all appliances that basically cool, how does it work?
You know, the whole thing that makes it work is essentially there's a compressor, there's a condenser coil, there's an evaporator coil. So these are all the different components. But in essence, what's happening is a heat transfer is taking place. The heat and the humidity is being sucked out, is being transferred over to the refrigerant, which is heating up. The refrigerant is moving, is blowing the hot air out, which is why if we stand, you know, and stand outside the compressor, you feel this hot air blowing out. And then it's, you know, chilled again and then sent back. And then the same process continues to repeat until you're within the room or the space, you get the desired temperature that you want.
The chlorofluorocarbons were phased out by the Montreal Protocol due to their part in ozone depletion, leading to the adoption of HCFCs and HFCs. I asked Vishal, how do the harmful impacts of these chemicals differ from those of CFCs? Since 1987, when the Montreal Protocol was adopted, do we have evidence to show that HFCs and HCFCs have proved to be less severe emitters? And has this shift been useful? Vishal tells me that both HCFCs and HFCs are potent greenhouse gases contributing to global warming. While they don't deplete the ozone layer as severely as CFCs, their high global warming potential is a concern for climate change. Now, since the Montreal Protocol's adoption in 1987, there is evidence that the phase-out of CFCs and the subsequent reduction in HCFC use has been effective in protecting the ozone layer. However, the effectiveness of the shift to HFCs in mitigating climate change is debatable. While they don't harm the ozone layer, the HFCs have a high global warming potential. Overall, the shift away from the CFCs has been beneficial for ozone protection, but the transition to HFCs raise concerns about their impact on climate change. There is an ongoing effort to find alternative refrigerants with lower global warming potential to further mitigate the environmental impact of refrigeration and air conditioning systems. Vishal explains that there are two types of refrigerants that are most widely used in ACs in India. One is R32 and the other is R410. They are both different types of hydrofluorocarbons. R32, for example, has a greenhouse warming potential of 657. That's 700 times more potent. And R410 has almost 2088 greenhouse warming potential, which is significant. Now, there's an effort to transition to R290, which has a global warming potential of 3, which is almost negligible. But Vishal says that there's a greater amount of risk associated with it because it's considered to be highly flammable.
And also, so I read somewhere that, you know, there's something we can do with a refrigerant. So there's a method to recycle and reuse refrigerants. And so I want to understand, firstly, to understand whether it's true. And then does this process contribute to reducing global emissions? And are there any ongoing efforts to kind of recycle refrigerants worldwide? Because I know that it's not probably happening in India. And so, yeah, I also, by extension, want to understand what is the situation in India right now about it.
So many AC manufacturers are subject to this recycling protocol that's put in by the government, which needs to show that there is part of a complete dismantling of these systems. And then all the components are captured, reused, including the refrigerant. Yeah, but overall, I know that there is a strong recycling program that takes the whole component of the AC, that takes the entire AC and produces it. And there's a certification process in the recycling. It's a pretty well-established method, and it's one in which many suppliers, manufacturers, are required to be go through in terms of every year, like a certain amount of older ACs need to be recycled through this process.
We know that despite the efforts to out harmful refrigerants, as you were also briefing, they are still widely used because there is increasing demand in air conditioning. And I also read the industry innovation in India especially is very sluggish. So I wanted to explain that also. And what is happening in terms of the legislations, but can you also for me refer to some legislation around disposal?
If you talk about ACs, they're basically governed in India through agencies, right? And they are kind of split. One is the energy use of ACs, and I'm talking just about the energy input, right? That comes from the Bureau of Energy Efficiency. That's the institutional agency that is responsible for managing the energy use of ACs. And the Bureau has a program called the Standards and Labeling Program, which aims to reduce the energy use from these appliances. So the Standard and Labeling Program basically sets a minimum energy performance standards for these ACs. And they focus just on energy use, right? They're not looking at refrigerants. The program, Standard and Labeling Program, has a way of labeling them. So one is the least efficient and five is most efficient. But there is no AC that can be sold in India without this label. Over the years, this labeling program has now been in place for well over 12, 15 years, somewhere, something in that order of magnitude. And it has led to an energy use reduction or energy efficiency improvement of close to 65%. So it's a pretty significant increase. It had also led to significant technology transition from a fixed, what they call the fixed speed, to the inverter type ACs that are now you see in the market. So that's one agency focusing on energy use. The second aspect of the AC relating to refrigerants, the use of refrigerants, and also the recycling program, is covered by the Ministry of Environment, Forests and Climate Change. They're the ones that are the institutional authority on refrigerants. They're the ones that are responsible for the implementation of the Kigali Amendment and the Montreal Protocol overall. They're also the one that is responsible for ensuring the recycling process and waste and leakages and so on and so forth.
How is the Indian government and the market, in fact, is incentivizing this? I read about sluggish innovation in this industry. So how is the government incentivizing this innovation, especially in the air conditioning industry?
One is obviously the production of these policies. The Bureau of Energy Efficiency has, a minimum energy performance standards relating to stars and label is a way of incentivizing that way, because consumers, when they go, they can see what is the efficiency level, they can make the choice accordingly, and so on and so forth. MOFCC also will have other types of incentives that may relate to supporting the transition to in the phase out of its EFCs and HFCs as per the Montreal Protocol and the Kigali Agreement. So in addition to that, there's a certain large level of incentive called the production incentives. AC manufacturers have received a large amount of these incentives. These incentives also are helping to ensure the localization of production. So a greater part of the supply chain is now embedded here. Most of the AC components used to be imported, but with PLI, we've seen some reduction in the level of imports associated with the components of ACs and more of it being produced domestic. Not more of it, but some of it being produced domestically. At the state level, there is some other incentives. For example, the Ministry of Power has set a guideline to the states, encouraging them to adopt higher efficient products such as a 5-star AC or a 5-star fan in the public procurement. That's another layer of support that's provided. Several distribution utilities provide their consumers with specific incentives to purchase a highly energy efficient AC or a highly energy efficiency fan. These are called demand side management programs that stand in utility. So I think if you look, there's a different set, many different types of incentives working towards production, towards consumer choice, towards the state and subnational levels, towards procurement, that collectively, I think, is helping to accelerate the adoption of more efficient and less harmful ACs. But is the speed of the acceleration fast enough to the problem? The answer is probably not. I think we need to be able to try to do it faster. Just given the stock of ACs that are rising in India every year, I think there is an opportunity to look at how to accelerate the pace of these incentives, programs, policies, which collectively then allow these ACs to be far more efficient so that consumers are saving money, the environment is also less impacted. So I think there is a bunch of innovation that is taking place. The innovation is taking form is in two different ways. One is PLI, the production-linked incentives, is a way that is enabling innovation because it's requiring companies to look at how to localize the production, so that requires some new form. Second form of innovation is many companies are participating in global challenges. So, for example, there's a 5X challenge, which is looking at how to create a new set of ACs that lowers the impact, the overall climate impact from the current AC by at least 5 times. So part of those ACs are being now tested in India. There's also, you know, there's the policies themselves are an innovation push. For example, the shift or the increases in the minimum energy performance standards caused the entire AC market to move from fixed speed in ACs to an inverter AC over the last few years. So that is itself an example. Innovation comes in different ways. It's induced by policies, induced by market transformation activities from the states or from local stakeholders. On the whole, if you look globally, there's a sense that some of the most efficient ACs are currently produced in China. China produces almost 85% of the world's ACs. And so I think there's also an interest in trying to figure out how Indian manufacturers can access some of those technologies. That is a work in progress, but I feel like a collective effort consisting from government, industry, and consumer bodies and necessary to try to get hold of some of the best available technologies that they are, so it can be better produced.
So I read about, approximately 90% of the refrigerant emissions that occur at the end of the equipment's life. So right when you talked about how, you know, people are trying to figure how do they completely dispose of that equipment, including the, you know, everything in that, all the elements. So could you explain how does this happen and discuss, the potential strategies that can reduce these emissions during disposal?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think if the disposal methods are not right, like, so for instance, if you sell it in an unorganized way, and then it's just sort of dismantle off basically the refrigerant, so it leaks up. So refrigerant leakages is a huge problem, not only during its operation, but also fundamentally during its disposal. You know, so I think in order to enhance it, what we need is twofold. One is you need better operational and management during the course of the ownership of the AC. So there's a lot of focus on trying to think about how do we upskill technicians, how do we upskill systems so that even during the operations of it, right, you limit the amount of leakages of refrigerants into the atmosphere. That's what you don't want because it's so potent. Even just colloquially, if you look around, like probably so many people see examples where somebody's coming in trying to fill it because some refrigerant has leaked out somebody's AC or the other. So that's what you want to prevent during its operation. And the ways to do that is just upskilling staff, getting more methods in there, making sure that companies who are servicing this are not just better trained, but also more accountable in how it's doing it. And the fourth is also how it's installed. So it requires a whole upliftment, upskilling of technicians, which means that we need to invest a lot more in the technical capacity of human resources and systems. So that's a huge need for us. I think it's something that, you know, we need to invest much more heavily on. The last part is on the disposal. And in disposals, I think the systems and processes are well established. Like As I said, you know, the recycling protocol that the Ministry of Environment, Forests and Climate Change has for ACs takes into account how refrigerants need to be handled, how they need to be collected, and so on and so forth. There's a certification process to ensure that it is actually done in a certain way. Manufacturers are required to do it. So the formal part of the process exists. The question is, how do we get those disposals into that formal process, because the informal collection is so large. One of the also things that we see in India is the existence of a secondhand market, in which you see a lot of, you know, rental equipment, right? So when you rent, you're less sensitive to, you know, its quality, its leakages, its efficiency, that kind of stuff. And as a result, that's something, it's very hard to monitor also from a policy point of view. But I think that's something we need to look at as the stock of AC grows. In India, for example, as I mentioned earlier, there's about 110 million ACs, out of which close to 30 million ACs are older than 8 years, right? In a few years, these ACs will get older. Some of them will be replaced. When it gets replaced, the question is, what happens to the old ACs? Does it get recycled, or does it go back into the second-hand market where it just adjusted a little bit and put back into use for not necessarily retail, but for this kind of rental market, because ownership is so low and the need for cooling becoming so high. And not sure that there is one easy fix. I think it is a multidimensional one where many agencies have to be involved simultaneously.